Open your Bibles to the book of Habakkuk. Rather than read this entire chapter and then go back and preach on it, I'm going to be doing a study on it, and we'll read the relevant portions of the chapter as we go through it. We are thinking about the Christian's book of why. Having a look at the book of Habakkuk. Habakkuk asked the Lord in verse 2, O Lord, how long shall I cry and you will not hear? There is a question I suspect most of us think, although we are hesitant to voice that question, either to others, much less to God. And that question is, why, Lord? Why have you done this? Why have you not done this? Why have you allowed this? Why did you direct that? This past week, I was driving in my Volare, across the East Gadsden Bridge. And one of the tires blew out. Okay? Now, I'm in my seatbelt, and it's interesting what rushes through your brain when you're in what seemed to be a moment of crisis, because the wheel locked up. And I figured I was going to start skidding pretty soon. So I looked over at the guardrail, and I was wondering, if that guardrail going to be able to hold me? And then I saw a car coming on the opposite side of the road up this way, and I wondered, when I start spinning, am I going to spin in front of that car? But happily, the wheel finally loosened, and a big piece of rubber went flying off, and I limped along the side of the road. And you wonder why things, and I haven't figured it out yet as to why something like that happens, except the Lord uses it to remind you how tentative your life really is, and that nothing is certain. I have never driven in Gadsden, Alabama, as carefully as I drove after that happened. And it puts the fear of God in you. It puts some kind of fear in you, because after it was all over, I was like this. I could hardly change the tire. The Bible asks a lot of questions as well. This year, I'm reading through the Bible, and as I'm reading through, I'm making a list of all the questions of the Bible. That may not sound like an exciting Bible study for you, but I think that it's interesting for me. And I list all the Old Testament, all the New Testament questions, and it's just interesting to read. Let me ask you, which book of the New Testament do you think most of the questions appear? Anybody want to hazard a guess? Don't be embarrassed. It doesn't really matter if you're wrong. Okay, Jonathan? Huh? In the New Testament. Matthew? That's a pretty good guess. That's a pretty good guess, because it is one of the Gospels. It's one of the Gospels. Okay? Yes. Okay, John, the Gospel of John, so far as I have found, has asked more questions than any other book of the New Testament. Anybody want to take a guess how many? This is not the $100 million lottery. Okay? Go ahead, Jonathan. Well, no, not quite that many. No, we're a little, you scale it down considerably, about 90%, in fact. Go ahead. A little more than that. All right, one more. Okay, go ahead, Tab. Huh? A little more than that, too. Well, let me tell you. All right, go ahead. We're working on it. Would you believe 156? All right, now let me ask you this. Which book, now this side over here is already answered, so this side over here has to answer this question. Okay, now you all don't say anything. Now, which book in the Old Testament do you think contains the most questions? No, not Habakkuk. Psalms? No, not Psalms. Although the Psalm... No, it's not. I was going to say something else. Lamentations? No. Who said Job? Alice? Oh, good for you. Yes, that was good, Alice. Hey, now you get to fix me a sandwich tonight. Job, do you have any idea how many questions are asked in the book of Job? All right, Jonathan. Huh? Kind of multiply that. Double it. Yeah. That's getting closer. 307 questions. In fact, in the Old Testament, the books that have the most questions are Job, Genesis, believe it or not, and the book of 1 Samuel. And in the New Testament, John, followed by the book of Romans, Heidi, as you suggested a minute ago. So that the Bible is just full of questions, and I thought it would be just fun and interesting sometime to organize all these questions and to see what the questions are and to preach a series on it. Regardless, here we're faced with a question, the question that often we're afraid to ask, and that is the question, why? Before we consider chapter 1 tonight, let's look at the background to Habakkuk. The author is Habakkuk, and his name means to embrace, as I indicated earlier. And when we come to chapter 3, we'll discover why or the significance of his name. Now, Habakkuk was a contemporary of Jeremiah. From time to time, people who come into my office sit across my desk and they look over to the right and they see a picture. Those of you who've been in my office know that there's a picture of a prophet there and he has a tear coming down one cheek, and somebody who will call attention to it and I'll ask them, do you know who it is? And then they will guess as well. Most people guess Moses. But do you know who that prophet is? Jeremiah. He has a tear. The tear indicates who he is because Jeremiah is called the weeping prophet. All right, and here we have Habakkuk. Habakkuk is sort of a little book, a summary book of the book of Jeremiah. Jeremiah and Habakkuk lived at the end of the 7th century and into the 6th century B.C., which meant that they were preaching at the time that Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians were coming into Israel and beginning to destroy Jerusalem and Israel. In fact, the northern kingdom of Ephraim was already gone. That was finished in 721. But now the southern kingdom, which was Judah and Jerusalem, was about to be destroyed by the Babylonians. And so Nebuchadnezzar came down in 597, and Habakkuk probably saw that first wave of destruction in 597. Now the city didn't fall until 587, but Habakkuk saw it. He saw this terrible, godless nation sweep down upon the people, the children of Israel, God's supposedly chosen people, and begin to destroy them and to kill them and to burn their city and to take them as captives into Babylon. And so he's at the point where he wonders what God is doing and why. It is unique prophecy. I say it is unique because actually the book of Habakkuk is not addressed to a nation. It's not addressed to Israel. It's not addressed to Judah. It's not even addressed to any one person. The book of Habakkuk is unique because it's a dialogue between a man of God, a prophet, and God. Now, no doubt Habakkuk recorded it so that it could be communicated to God's people at a time when the situation was so serious that everybody wondered what was going on and what God was doing. But regardless, it is a book that expresses a conversation between God and the prophet Habakkuk. Now, other people, other saints of God, have wrestled with God in the past. Of course, here's Habakkuk. There was Jacob at Peniel. You remember? And God changed his name, Israel. And there was Job himself. Job's words of wrestling and struggle with God just prick the human heart and conscience. Such a book, no wonder it has so many questions in it. Look, for example, in Job chapter 30, beginning in verse 20. Listen to Job's struggle with God. Job is speaking. He says, "I cry out to you," that is God, "but you, God, do not answer me. I stand up and you regard me. But you have become cruel to me." Can you imagine telling God that? "God, you're mean. Why are you so mean? With the strength of your hand, you oppose me. You lift me up to the wind and cause me to ride on it. You spoil my success. Everything was great, God, until you came along. I was doing all right. I know that you will bring me to death and to the house appointed for all living." And then he goes on and on. You can read it for yourself to the end of the chapter. The point is, here is a man of faith, a man of God, who is asking the final question, the bold question, the question that we're often afraid to express, lest God zap us. Why are you doing what you're doing? Then, of course, there was Jonah, who knew why God was doing what he was doing. And so his struggle with God meant that he was just going to leave altogether and not have a thing to do with God, with the ministry, with preaching and with talking about God, because he wanted God's enemies to go to hell. And he didn't want them to be saved. He knew God was merciful, and if he shared the gospel, God would forgive him. That wasn't good enough for that preacher. He wanted that town ripped apart. He wanted God to come down and strike it and the ground to open up and swallow them and for every one of them to go to hell because they were mean. And they were opposed to God's people. Here's a message of struggle to comprehend the ways of God. One of the verses I memorized several years ago was Psalm 77:19. "Thy way is in the sea." Do you know it? "Thy way is in the sea, and thy path in the great waters, and thy footsteps are not known." You try to figure out what God is doing, and you're going to be whistling in the wind. Now, God has revealed His Word, and He's given us His truth. But don't start reading the signs. Don't start talking about how Russia is going to come down on Israel, and the end of the world is going to come. Don't start talking about this is the last day, and the Bible prophesies that what's going on in the Middle East right now is an indication of the fulfillment of prophecy. Listen. Jesus Christ said he didn't know. Are you wiser? Do you know more than Jesus Christ? Do your books? He said, of that day and of that hour, no man knoweth except the Father. Well, this book, the book of Habakkuk, was popular during the period of time called the intertestamental time. Do you know what that is? It is the time between the New Testament and the Old Testament. Now, in my Bible, it's only one page. But in history, it was a period of 400 years. As we said this morning, the last prophecy is, behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet. And then we read, beginning in the Gospel of John, as we studied this morning, that Elijah came, and the particular Elijah that was prophesied was John the Baptist. 400 years, the book of Habakkuk was very popular. Why? Because Israel was nothing. It was divided up and ruled by two kingdoms. One was in the south and one was in the east. They were called the Ptolemies and the Seleucids. And during all this 400-year period, except around 200 B.C., when some Jewish leaders called the Maccabees came and began to lead Israel back. And so the book of Habakkuk was so popular because God's people were under oppression. Well, let's consider these questions. There are two main questions that Habakkuk asked in chapter 1. And we're going to look at those questions tonight and in part give an answer. Not an entire answer, but I want you to look at verses 1 through 4. O Lord, how long shall I cry and you will not hear? Even cry out to you violence and you will not save. Why do you show me iniquity and cause me to see trouble? For plundering and violence are before me. There is strife and contention arises. Therefore the law is powerless and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous. Therefore perverse judgment proceeds. That's question number one. Now, Elmer Smick was a teacher of Old Testament at Gordon Conwell in Boston. He wrote a paraphrase of that first section, and this is how he paraphrased Habakkuk's question. How long do I have to cry to make you listen, Lord? Don't you see the violence, the outrage, the contention, the discord that is everywhere? The law means nothing. There isn't any justice. Wicked men run everything, so justice is distorted. Perhaps Jill Briscoe, in her study in Habakkuk, summarized the question here better. At least she summarized it succinctly when she said, the question is this, is God there? Is God there? And secondly, does He care? And that is, those questions really form one. And that is a question that often occupies our own thoughts and minds as to what is going on in the world around us. I mean, as I've said to the book of Habakkuk, the background is that evil was oppressing evil people. Not only that, but within Israel itself, there was sin and wickedness. The prophet says in verse 2, he says, I cry out violence. Violence was in the Old Testament a word that was used to alarm other people to a crime that was being committed. And if you said the word violence, then somebody was supposed to come to your aid, a policeman. It was like dialing 911. Violence! But the prophet said, I dialed 911 and nobody answered. Justice is gone. The good suffer and the evil prosper. There was a book that has been published, popular in recent days, and the title of it was, or is, Disappointment with God. Good night. Disappointment with God. Maybe some of you here tonight are disappointed because God hasn't done something that you wanted Him to do. God hasn't acted the way you thought God should act. And I know He doesn't. Because He doesn't act the way I think He should act either. The Psalms are filled with the same struggle, just like we read in Job, and we read them again and again in the book of Psalms. And many of the questions that I have found in reading the Old Testament and New Testament have to do with the problem of why. Why? We face the same struggles every day. Why does God remove prayer from our public school system and the Ten Commandments can no longer be posted in public school? Why? I mean, surely God. I mean, God is God, right? So God could do something. He could step in, take care of that situation. He could turn the heart of the king in whatever direction He pleases. He can direct the Supreme Court. He can direct Congress. He can direct the president. He controls everything. Why doesn't He do it? Huh? Even more personally, why doesn't He... why doesn't He straighten out the rough places in our own lives? The irregular people, the irritating people, the circumstances that we deal with day in and day out, why doesn't God just come down in a blaze of glory and then, bam, it'll all be over and straighten it out? It's like we're all sitting around sometimes waiting for God to prove that He loves us. And when something good finally happens, we're so ecstatic that we often feel there is a God after all. God does love me after all. As if He had to prove to you by doing something. But I hope you know, and I remind myself of this as well, there is no greater proof that God loves you than the cross of Jesus Christ. If you're waiting for God to do something exciting and lovely and wonderful in your life, and you look away from the cross of Christ as if that isn't the greatest and the best, then you're going to be disappointed with God. Because you're going to say, God, You didn't come through. But if you look at the cross, you fall down and you worship. And you say, God, You came through for me. Well, God has a response to Habakkuk in His question. And His response is contained in verses 5 through 11. Let's read those. Look among the nations and watch. Be utterly astounded, for I will work a work in your days which you would not believe, though it were told you. Remember His question now. He says, Lord, how long shall I cry and you will not hear? Now the answer. Verse 6. For indeed I am raising up the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, a bitter and hasty nation which marches through the breadth of the earth to possess dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful, their judgment and their dignity. proceed from themselves. Their horses also are swifter than leopards and more fierce than evening wolves. Their chargers charge ahead. Their cavalry comes from afar. They fly as the eagle that hastens to eat. They all come for violence. Their faces are set like the east wind. They gather captives like sand. They scoff at kings and princes, are scorned by them. They deride every stronghold, for they heap up mounds of earth and seize it. Then his mind changes and he transgresses. He commits offense, imputing his power to his God. Now what God responds, the way God responds to Habakkuk, is in itself alarming. Here is this poor prophet who is crying out to God, Lord, how long shall I cry? Violence, injustice. Do you know what God says? Did you follow what the gist of what he said in verses 5 through 11? He says, Habakkuk, you haven't seen anything yet. You think it's bad now. I'm getting ready to bring the worst nation, the most godless people, and they're coming. They're going to destroy the city. God answered Habakkuk's prayer. Habakkuk said, how long shall I cry and you will not hear? God answered him. But what do you do when you get an answer from God that you don't like? What do you do when God gives you an answer that you don't care for and you wish that he had not answered that way? Well, I think we would follow the same procedure that Habakkuk followed, and that is we ask another question. And that's what Habakkuk comes to. Let's read verses 12 through 17. This is Habakkuk's second question. The first question was a question of how long God will wait to speak and to do something. And God said, I'm going to do something even worse. Verse 12. Then Habakkuk says, are you not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, you have appointed them for judgment. O rock, you have marked them for correction. You are of purer eyes than to behold evil and cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours one more righteous than he? Why? Why do you make men like fish of the sea, like creeping things that have no ruler over them? They take up all of them with a hook. They catch them in their net and gather them in their dragnet. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they sacrifice to their net. He's talking about the Babylonians capturing the Israelites. And burn incense to their dragnet, because by them their share is sumptuous and their food plenteous. Shall they therefore empty their net and continue to slay nations without pity? Again, let me read Elmer Smith's brief paraphrase. He says this, Lord, aren't you the holy God with power over death? How can you use a people like this as an instrument of justice? How can God use the wicked as an instrument to accomplish his purpose? And yet it is marvelous in our eyes. God uses whomever and however and whenever he pleases. I've studied, for example, a lot of different evangelistic methods. I've read about the Roman road. I have used the four laws and EE, the bridge that I have studied, and other methods. But do you know the bottom line is this when it comes to evangelism? I believe it with all my heart. The bottom line is this. God is able to take any witness when it is faithful to His Word in any way that it's presented and bring light and salvation to a soul. Do you know one of the greatest evangelistic books ever written? Right here. How often do we use it? How often do we say, here, read the Gospel of John, and you'll come to the knowledge of Jesus Christ. Well, the point is that God uses different means to accomplish His purpose. And in this particular instance, God used the awful, terrible, no-good-for-nothing people called the Babylonians to actually punish some people who were better than they. In summary, the question that Habakkuk is asking at this point is a question that occupies our mind. Is God fair? Evil happens to good people. Bad happens to good people. I mean, don't tell me that the court system is just. I mean, it may be legal. But to say it's just is something short of ludicrous. Is God fair? Is God fair to do what He does to allow this wickedness to take place? That's what Habakkuk asked. Why? God, Habakkuk says, God, I thought You were holy. How can You let this take place? Why does God use the unholy? Why does God use the really bad to punish the not so bad? Is there really justice with God? Well, I'm going to say more about those questions and the answers that God gives in the coming weeks. But I want to give two hints as to the answer that God gives, that Habakkuk gives in this section. And the first one is in verse 12, the first answer that would help Habakkuk and you and me. It says in verse 12, "Are You not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One?" In other words, Habakkuk turns from his questioning and he makes a statement of faith. And that statement of faith is to recognize the sovereign majesty of God. He is asking God, is it fair? But on the other hand, he is also saying, God, I know that You are sovereign and You are Lord and King over all. I don't understand this. But You're the King. And then he makes another statement of faith, and that's also in verse 12. He says, "Are You not from everlasting, O Lord, my Holy One?" And then he makes this remarkable statement. He says, "We shall not die." In other words, Habakkuk acts from the standpoint of faith. On the one hand, he looks up and he sees God as a sovereign God. He has all these questions that are surging through his brain. And yet he makes this remarkable statement of faith. On the one hand, God is sovereign. He is majestic. He is holy. I don't understand how it all fits together. But God is holy and therefore He's perfect in everything He does. But on the other hand, he says, God will not let me die. Now, I don't think in the deeper spiritual sense he meant physically. What I interpret these words to mean is that God will never wipe me out forever. But he says God will one day turn what is upside down, right side up. And he would right the causes that are wrong right now. And he will make his name just. The wicked will be punished. The good will be rewarded. Christians will one day judge even the angels and all the nations of the world. We will sit and reign with Jesus Christ. And everything will be right. Everything will be just as it should be. Sometimes we feel that the evil and the bad has taken over, just like Habakkuk felt. That sickness, this past week our church has seen it. Sickness and bad things happen. And there are so many wicked, evil people in the world whom we think bad things probably should happen. Habakkuk asked why, and the answer is twofold: in the majesty of God, who is holy, and in the faith of the person who says, I shall not die. I pray that the Lord would enable each of us to take that kind of faith into this week, no matter what happens. That your faith would be strengthened, no matter which questions rush through your mind, crying for an answer. That you would respond, God, you are holy and majestic. And I shall not die. I'll not finally lose what is right and good and fair.